Chapter 11. Warning. Death of a World. The Last Chthonian. Saul Tarvitz's first sight of the Coral City was the magnificent stone orchid of the Precentor's palace. He stepped from the battered Thunderhawk onto the roof of one of the palace wings, the spectacular dome soaring above him. Smoke coiled in the air from the battles within the palace, and the terrible sound of screaming came from the square to the north, along with the powerful stench of freshly spilled blood. Tarvitz took it in at a glance, the thought hitting him hard that at any moment it would be all gone. He saw Astartes moving along the roof towards him, Emperor's children, and his heart leapt to see Nasike's squad, with Lucius at its head, his sword smoking from the battle. "Tarvitz!" called Lucius, and Tarvitz thought he detected even more of a swagger to the swordsman's stride. "I thought you'd never make it. Jealous of the kills?"
"Lucius, what's the situation?" asked Tarvitz.
"The palace is ours, and Prahl is dead. Killed by my own hand. No doubt you can smell the world-eaters. They're just not at home unless everything stinks of blood. The rest of the city's cut off. We can't raise anyone." Lucius indicated the city's far west, where the towering form of the Dies Irae blazed fire upon the hapless Istvanians out of sight below. "Though it looks like the Death Guard will soon run out of things to kill."
"We have to contact the rest of the strike force now," said Tarvitz. "The Sons of Horus and the Death Guard. Get a squad on it. Get someone up to higher ground."
"Why?" asked Lucius. "Saul, what's happening?"
"We're going to be hit. Something big. A virus strike."
"The Istvanians?"
"No," said Tarvitz sadly. "We are betrayed by our own."
Lucius hesitated. "The War Master? Saul, what are you—"
"We've been sent down here to die, Lucius. Fulgrim chose those who were not part of their grand plan."
"Saul, that's insane," cried Lucius. "Why would our Primarch do such a thing?"
"I do not know, but he would not have done this without the War Master's command," said Tarvitz. "This is but the first stage in some larger plan. I do not know its purpose, but we have to try and stop it."
Lucius shook his head, his features twisted in petulant bitterness. "No, the Primarch wouldn't send me to die, not after all the battles I fought for him. Look at what I've become. I was one of Fulgrim's chosen. I've never faltered, never questioned. I would have followed Fulgrim into hell."
"But I wouldn't, Lucius," said Tarvitz, "and you are my friend. I'm sorry, but we don't have time for this. We have to get the warning out and then find shelter. I'll take word to the world-eaters. You raise the Sons of Horus and Death Guard. Don't go into the details. Just tell them that there is a virus strike inbound and to find whatever shelter they can."
Tarvitz looked at the reassuring solidity of the Precentor's palace and said,
"There must be catacombs or deep places beneath the palace. If we can reach them, we may survive this. This city is going to die, Lucius, but I'll be damned if I'm going to die with it."
"I'll get a Vox officer up here," said Lucius, a steel anger in his voice.
"Good. We don't have much time, Lucius. The bombs will be launched any moment."
"This is rebellion," said Lucius.
"Yes," said Tarvitz. "It is."
Beneath his ritualistic scars, Lucius was still the perfect soldier he had always been, a talisman whose confidence could infect the men around him, and Tarvitz knew he could rely on him. The swordsman nodded and said, "Go. Find Captain Erlen. I'll raise the other legions and get our warriors into cover. I will speak with you again."
"Until then," said Tarvitz.
Lucius turned to Nasike, barked an order, and ran back towards the palace dome. Tarvitz followed, looking down on the northern plaza and glimpsing the seething battle there, hearing the screams and the sound of chain blades. He looked up at the late morning sky. Clouds were gathering. Any moment, falling virus bombs would bore through those clouds. The bombs would fall all over Istvan III, and billions of people would die. Among the trenches and bunkers that sprawled to the west of the Coral City, men and Astartes died in storms of mud and fire. The Dies Irae shuddered with the weight of fire it laid down. Moderati Kassar felt it all, as though the immense, multi-barreled Vulcan Bolter were his own hand. The Titan had suffered many wounds, its legs scarred by missile detonations, and furrows scored in its mighty torso by bunker-mounted cannons. Kassar felt them all, but a multitude of wounds could not slow down the Dies Irae or turn it from its course. Destruction was its purpose, and death was the punishment it brought down on the heads of the Emperor's enemies. Kassar's heart swelled. He had never felt so close to his Emperor, at one with the God-machine, a fragment of the Emperor's own strength instilled in the Dies Irae.
"Arukin, pull to starboard," ordered Princeps Turnit from the command chair. "Avoid those bunkers, or they'll foul the port leg."
The Dies Irae swung to the side, its immense foot taking the roofs from a tangle of bunkers and shattering artillery emplacements as it crashed forwards. A scrum of Istvanian soldiers scrambled from the ruins, setting up heavy weapons to pour fire into the Titan as it towered over them. The Istvanians were well-drilled and well-armed, and though the majority of their weapons weren't the equal of a lasgun, trenches were a great leveller, and a man with a rifle was a man with a rifle when the gunfire started. The Death Guard slaughtered thousands of them as they bludgeoned their way through the trenches. But the Istvanians were more numerous, and they hadn't run. Instead, they had fallen back trench by trench, rolling away from the relentless advance of the Death Guard. The Istvanians, with their drab green-grey helmets and mud-spattered flak suits, were hard to pick out against the mud and rubble with the naked eye. But the sensors on the Dies Irae projected a sharp-edged image onto Kassar's retina that picked them out in wondrously clear detail. Kassar fired a blast of massive-caliber shells, watching as columns of mud and bodies sprayed into the air like splashes in water. The Istvanians disappeared, destroyed by the hand of the Emperor.
"Enemy forces massing to the port forward quadrant," said Moderati Arukin.
To Kassar, his voice felt distant, though he was just across the command bridge of the Titan.
"The Death Guard can handle them," replied Turnit. "Concentrate on the artillery. That could hurt us."
Below Kassar, the gunmetal forms of the Death Guard glinted around the bunkers as two squads of them threw grenades through the gun ports and kicked down the doors, spraying the Istvanians who still lived inside with bolter fire or incinerating them with sheets of fire from their flamers. From the head of the Dies Irae, the Death Guard looked like a swarm of beetles, with the carapaces of their power armor scuttling through the trenches. A few Death Guard lay where they had fallen, cut down by artillery fire or the massed guns of the Istvanian troops, but there were few compared to the Istvanian corpses, strewn at every intersection of trenches. Meter by meter, the defenders were being driven towards the northernmost extent of the trenches, and when they reached the white marble of a tall basilica with a spire shaped like a trident, they would be trapped and slaughtered. Kassar shifted the weapon arm of the Dies Irae to aim at a booming artillery position some 500 meters away, as it belched tongues of flame and threw explosive shells towards the Death Guard lines.
"Princeps," called Kassar. "Enemy artillery moving up on the eastern quadrant."
Turnit didn't answer him, too intent on something being said to him on his personal command channel. The Princeps nodded at whatever order he had just received and shouted,
"Halt, Arukin! Cease the stride pattern! Kassar, shut off the ammunition feed!"
Kassar instinctively switched off the cycling of the weapon that thundered from the Titan's arm, and the shock forced his consciousness back to the command bridge. He no longer looked through the eyes of the Dies Irae, but was back with his fellow officers.
"Princeps?" asked Kassar, scanning the readouts. "Is there a malfunction? If there is, I'm not seeing it. The primary systems are reading fine."
"It's not a malfunction," replied Turnit sharply.
Kassar looked up from the information scrolling across his vision in unfocused columns.
"Moderati Kassar," barked Turnit. "How's our weapon temperature?"
"Acceptable," said Kassar. "I was going to push it on that artillery."
"Close up the coolant ducts and seal the magazine feeds as soon as possible."
"Princeps?" said Kassar in confusion. "That will leave us unarmed."
"I know that," replied Turnit, as though to a simpleton. "Do it, Arukin. I need us sealed."
"Sealed, sir?"
asked Arukin, sounding as confused as Kassar felt.
"Yes, sealed. We have to be airtight from top to bottom," said Turnit, opening a channel to the rest of the mighty war machine's crew. "All crew, this is Princeps Turnit. Adopt emergency biohazard posts right now. The bulkheads are being sealed. Shut off the reactor vents and be prepared for power down."
"Princeps," said Arukin urgently.
Is it a biological weapon? Atomics? The Istvanians have a weapon we didn't know about, replied Turnit, but Kassar could tell he was lying. They're launching it soon. We have to lock down, or we'll be caught in it.
Kassar looked down at the trenches through the Titan's eyes. The Death Guard was still advancing through the trenches and bunker ruins.
But Princeps, the Astartes...
You have your orders, Moderati Kassar, shouted Turnit, and you will follow them. Seal us up, every vent, every hatch, or we die.
Kassar willed the Dies Irae to shut its hatches and seal all its entranceways, his reluctance making the procedures sluggish. On the ground below, he watched the Death Guard continue to grind their way through the Coral City's defences, apparently unconcerned that the Istvanians were about to launch Throne knew what at them, or unaware. As the battle raged on, the Dies Irae fell silent. The main audience chamber of the Vengeful Spirit was a colossal, columned chamber with walls of marble and pilasters of solid gold. Its magnificence was like nothing Cinderman had ever seen, and the thousands of remembrancers who filled the chamber wore the expressions of awed children who had been shown some new, unheard-of wonder. Seeing many familiar faces, Cinderman guessed that the fleet's entire complement of remembrancers was present for the War Master's announcement. The War Master and Malachurst stood on a raised podium at the far end of the hall, too far away for either of them to recognize Cinderman, Mercedy, or Euphrate. Or at least, he hoped so. Who knew how sharp a legionary's eyesight was, let alone a Primarch's? Both Astartes were wrapped in cream robes, edged in gold and silver, and a detail of warriors stood beside them. A number of large Pict screens had been hung from the walls.
It looks like an iterator's rally on a compliant world, said Mercedy, echoing his own thoughts.
So similar was it that he began to wonder what message was to be imparted and how it would be reinforced. He looked around for plants in the audience who would clap and cheer at precise points to direct the crowd in the desired manner. Each of the screens displayed a slice of Istvan III, set against a black backdrop scattered with bright silver specks of the War Master's fleet.
Euphrate,
said Mercedy, as they made their way through the crowds of remembrances.
Remember how I said that this was a bad idea?
Yes,
said Euphrate, her face creased in a wide, innocent smile.
Well, now I think that this was a really bad idea. I mean, look at the number of Astartes here.
Cinderman followed Mercedes' gaze, already starting to sweat at the sight of so many armed warriors surrounding them. If even one of them recognized their faces, it was all over.
We have to see,
said Euphrate, turning and grabbing his sleeve.
You have to see.
Cinderman felt the heat of her touch and saw the fire behind her eyes, like thunder before a storm, and he realized with a start that he was a little afraid of Euphrate. The crowd milled in eager impatience, and Cinderman kept his face turned from the Astartes, staring into the middle of the audience chamber. Euphrate squeezed Mercedes' hand as the Pict screens leapt to life, and a gasp went up from the assembled remembrancers as they saw the bloody streets of the Coral City. Clearly shot from an aircraft, the images filled the giant Pict screens, and Cinderman felt his gorge rise at the sight of so much butchery. He remembered the carnage of the Whisperheads, and reminded himself that this was what the Astartes had been created to do, but the sheer visceral nature of that reality was something he knew he would never get used to. Bodies filled the streets, and arterial gore covered almost every surface, as though the heavens had rained blood.
"You remembrancers say you want to see war," said Horus, his voice easily carrying to the furthest corners of the hall. "Well, this is it."
Cinderman watched as the image shifted on the screen, pulling back and panning up through the sky and into the dark, star-spattered heavens above. Burning spears of light fell towards the battle below.
"What are those?" asked Mercedy.
"They're bombs," said Cinderman in horrified disbelief. "The planet is being bombarded."
"And so it begins," said Euphrate.
The plaza was a truly horrendous sight, ankle-deep in blood and strewn with thousands upon thousands of bodies. Most were blown open by bolter rounds, but many had been hacked down with chain blades or otherwise torn limb from limb.
Tarvitz hurried towards the makeshift strong point at its centre. The battlements formed from carved-up bodies heaped between the battered forms of fallen drop pods. A world-eater with blood-soaked armour and a scarred face nodded to him as he climbed the gruesome ramp of bodies. The warrior's armour was so drenched in blood that Tarvitz wondered for a moment why he hadn't just painted himself red to begin with.
"Captain Erlen," said Tarvitz, "where is he?"
The warrior wasted no breath on words and simply jerked a thumb in the direction of a warrior with dozens of fluttering oath papers hanging from his breastplate. Tarvitz nodded his thanks and set off through the strongpoint. He passed wounded Astartes, who were tended by an apothecary, who looked as if he had fought as hard as any of his patients. Beside him lay two fallen world-eaters, their bodies unceremoniously dumped out of the way. Erlen looked up as Tarvitz approached. The captain's face had been badly burned in some previous battle, and his axe was clotted with so much blood that it better resembled a club.
"Looks like the Emperor's children have sent us reinforcements," shouted Erlen, to grunts of laughter from his fellow world-eaters. "One whole warrior! We are blessed! The enemy will run away for sure!"
"Captain," said Tarvitz,
joining Erlen at the barricade of Istvanian dead.
"My name is Captain Saul Tarvitz, and I'm here to warn you that you have to get your squads into cover." "Into cover? Unacceptable," said Erlen, nodding towards the far side of the plaza.
Shapes moved in their windows and between the mansions.
"They're regrouping. If we move now, they will overwhelm us." "The Istvanians have a bioweapon," said Tarvitz,
knowing a lie was the only way to convince the world-eaters.
"They're going to fire it. It'll kill everyone and everything in the Coral City." "They're going to destroy their own capital? I thought this place was some kind of church. Holy to them." "They've shown how much they value their own," replied Tarvitz quickly, indicating the heaps of dead in front of them. "They'll sacrifice this city to kill us. Driving us from their planet is worth more to them than this city."
"So you would have us abandon this position?" demanded Erlen, as if Tarvitz had personally insulted his honour.
"How do you know all this?"
"I just got here from orbit. The weapon has already been unleashed. If you're above ground when the virus strike hits, you'll die. If you believe nothing else, believe that."
"Then where do you suggest we move to?"
"Just to the west of this position, Captain," said Tarvitz, stealing a glance at the sky. "The edge of the trench system is thick with bunkers, blast-proof shelters. If you get your men into them, they should be safe."
"Should be," snapped Erlen. "That's the best you can offer me."
Erlen stared at Tarvitz for a moment.
"If you are wrong, the blood of my warriors will be on your hands, and I will kill you for their deaths."
"I understand that, Captain," urged Tarvitz.
"But we don't have much time."
"Very well, Captain Tarvitz," said Erlen.
"Sergeant Fleist, left flank. Sergeant Rond, right. World-eaters, general advance to the west, blades out!"
The world-eaters drew their chain axes and swords. The blood-stained assault units hurried to the front and stepped over the makeshift barricades of corpses.
"Are you coming, Tarvitz?" asked Erlen.
Tarvitz nodded, drawing his broadsword and following the world-eaters into the plaza. Although they were fellow Astartes, he knew he was a stranger among them, as they ran, spitting battle curses and splashing through the dead, towards the potential safety of the bunkers. Tarvitz glanced up at the gathering clouds and felt his chest tighten. The first burning streaks were falling towards the city.
"It started," said Loken.
Lacoste looked up from the field vox. Fire was streaking through the sky towards the Coral City. Loken tried to judge the angle and speed of the falling darts of fire. Some of them would come down between the spires of the Siren Hold, just like the Sons of Horus's own drop pods had done hours earlier, and they would hit in a matter of minutes.
"Did Lucius say anything else?"
"No," said Lacoste. "Some bioweapon, that was all. It sounded like he ran into a firefight."
"Taric," shouted Loken, "we need to get into cover now, beneath the Siren Hold."
"Will that be enough?"
"If they dug their catacombs deep enough, then maybe.
And if not?
From what Lucius said, we'll die.
Then we'd better get a move on."
Loken turned to the Sons of Horus advancing around him.
"Incoming! Get to the Siren Hold and head down! Now!"
The closest spire of the Siren Hold was a towering monstrosity of grotesque writhing figures and leering gargoyle faces. a vision taken from some ancient hell of Istvan's myths. The sons of Horus broke their advance formation and ran towards it. Loken heard the distinctive boom of an airborne detonation high above the city and pushed himself harder as he entered the darkness of the tomb spire. Inside, it was dark and ugly, the floor paved with tortured half-human figures who reached up with stone hands as if through the bars of a cage.
"There's a way down," said Torgadon.
Loken followed as Astartes ran towards the catacomb entrance, a huge, monstrous stone head with a passageway leading down its throat. As the darkness closed around him, Loken heard a familiar sound drifting from beyond the walls of the Sirenhold. It was screaming. It was the song of the Coral City's death. The first virus bombs detonated high above the Coral City, the huge explosions spreading the deadly payloads far and wide into the atmosphere. Designed to kill every living thing on the surface of a planet, the viral strains released on Istvan III were the most efficient killers in the War Master's arsenal. The bombs had a high enough yield to murder the planet 100 times over and were set to burst at numerous differing altitudes and locations across the surface of the planet. The virus leapt through forests and plains, sweeping along algal blooms and riding air currents across the globe. It crossed mountains, forded rivers, burrowed through glaciers. The Imperium's deadliest weapons, the Emperor himself had been loath to use them. The bombs fell all across Istvan III, but most of all, they fell on the Coral City. The World Eaters were the furthest from cover and suffered the worst of the initial bombardment. Some had reached the safety of the bunkers, but many had not. Warriors fell to their knees as the virus penetrated their armored bodies. Deadly corrosive agents laced into the viral structure of the weapons, dissolving exposed pipes and armor joints, or finding their way inside through battle damage. Astartes screamed. The sound was all the more shocking for its very existence, rather than for the horror of its tone. The virus broke down cellular bonds at the molecular level, and its victims literally dissolved into a soup of rancid meat within minutes of exposure, leaving little but sloshing suits of rotted armor. Even many of those who reached the safety of the sealed bunkers died in agony as they shut the doors only to find they had brought the lethal virus inside with them. The virus spread through the civilian populace of Istvan III at the speed of thought, leaping from victim to victim in the time it took to breathe in its foul contagion. People dropped where they stood, the flesh sloughing from their skeletons as their nervous systems collapsed and their bones turned to the consistency of jelly. Bright explosions fed the viral feast, perpetuating the fatal reactions of corruption. The very lethality of the virus was its own worst enemy, for without a host organism to carry it from victim to victim, the virus quickly consumed itself. However, the bombardment from orbit was unrelenting, smothering the entire planet in a precisely targeted array of overlapping fire plans that ensured that nothing would escape the virus. Entire kingdoms and vassal states across the surface were obliterated in minutes. Ancient cultures that had survived old night and endured the horror of invasion a dozen times over fell without even knowing why, millions dying in screaming agony as their bodies betrayed them and fell apart, reducing them to rotted, decaying matter. Cinderman watched the bloom of darkness spread across the slice of the planet visible on the giant Pict screens. It spread in a wide black ring, eating its way across the surface of the planet with astonishing speed, leaving grey desolation behind it. Another wave of corruption crept in from another part of the surface, the two dark masses meeting and continuing to spread like the symptom of a horrible disease.
What is it? Whispered Mercedy.
You have already seen it, said Euphrati. The Emperor showed you, through me. It is death.
Cinderman's stomach lurched as he remembered the hideous vision of decay, his flesh disintegrating before him, and black corruption consuming everything around him. That was what was happening on Istvan III. This was the betrayal. Cinderman felt as though the blood had drained from him. An entire world was bathed in the immensity of death. He felt an echo of the fear it brought to the people of Istvan III, and that fear, multiplied across all those billions of people, was beyond his comprehension.
You are remembrances,
said Keela, a quiet sadness in her voice.
Both of you, remember this and pass it on. Someone must know.
He nodded dumbly, too numbed by what he was seeing to say anything.
Come on,
said Euphrates. We have to go.
Go?
Sobbed Mercedes, her eyes still fixed on the death of a world.
Go where?
Away, smiled Euphrates, taking their hands and leading them through the immobile, horrified throng of remembrances towards the edge of the chamber. At first, Cinderman let her lead him, his limbs unable to do more than simply place one foot in front of another, but as he saw she was taking them towards the Astartes at the edge of the chamber, he began to pull back in alarm.
Euphrates, he hissed, what are you doing? If those Astartes recognize us.
Trust me, Kirill, she said. I'm counting on that.
Euphrates led them towards a hulking warrior who stood apart from the others, and Cinderman knew enough of body language to know that this man was as horrified as they were at what was happening. The Astartes turned to face them, his face craggy and ancient, worn like old leather. Euphrates stopped in front of him and said,
Yakton, I need your help.
Yakton Cruz. Cinderman had heard Loken speak of him. The half-heard. He was a warrior of the old days, whose voice carried no weight amongst the higher echelons of command. A warrior of the old days.
You need my help? Asked Cruz. Who are you?
My name is Euphrates Keeler, and this is Mercedes Ollerton, said Euphrates.
As if her introductions in the midst of such carnage were the most normal thing in the world.
And this is Kirill Cinderman.
Cinderman could see the recognition in Cruz's face, and he closed his eyes as he awaited the inevitable shout that would see them revealed.
Loken asked me to look out for you,
said Cruz.
Loken?
Asked Mercedes.
Have you heard from him?
Cruz shook his head, but said,
He asked me to keep you safe while he was gone. I think I know what he meant now.
What do you mean? Asked Cinderman, not liking the way Cruz kept casting wary glances at the armed warriors that lined the walls of the chamber.
Never mind,
said Cruz.
Yakton,
commanded Euphrates, her voice laden with quiet authority.
Look at me.
The craggy-featured Astartes looked down at the slight form of Euphrates, and Cinderman could feel the power and determination that flowed from her.
You are the half-heard no longer, said Euphrates. Now your voice will be heard louder than any other in your legion. You cling to the old ways and wish them to return with the fond nostalgia of the venerable. Those days are dying here, Yakton, but with your help we can bring them back again.
What are you talking about, woman?
Snarled Cruz.
I want you to remember Chthonia,
said Euphrates, and Cinderman recoiled as he felt an electric surge of energy spark from her, as if her very skin was charged.
What do you know of the planet of my birth?
Only what I see inside you, Yakton,
said Euphrates, a soft glow building behind her eyes and filling her words with promise and seduction.
The honor and the valor from which the lunar wolves were forged. You are the only one who remembers, Yakton. You're the only one left that still embodies what it is to be an Astartes.
You know nothing of me,
he said, though Cinderman could see her words were reaching him, breaking down the barriers the Astartes erected between themselves and mortals.
Your brothers called you the half-herd, but you do not take them to task for it. I know this because a Chthonian warrior is honorable and cares not for petty insults. I also know that your counsel is not heard because yours is the voice of a past age, when the Great Crusade was a noble thing, done not for gain, but for the good of all humankind.
Cinderman watched as Cruz's face spoke volumes of the conflict raging within his soul. Loyalty to his legion vied with loyalty to the ideals that had forged it. At last he smiled ruefully and said,
Nothing too arduous, he said.
He looked over towards the Warmaster and Malachurst.
Come,
he said.
Follow me.
Where to? Asked Cinderman.
To safety, replied Cruz. Loken asked me to look out for you, and that's what I'm going to do. Now be silent and follow me.
Cruz turned on his heel and marched towards one of the many doors that led out of the audience chamber. Euphrates followed the warrior, and Cinderman and Mercedy trotted along after her, unsure as to where they were going or why. Cruz reached the door, a large portal of polished bronze, guarded by two warriors, moving them aside with a chopping wave of his hand.
"I'm taking these ones below," he said.
"Our orders are that no one is to leave," said one of the guards.
"And I am issuing you new orders," said Cruz,
a steely determination that Cinderman had not noticed earlier underpinning his words.
"Move aside, or are you disobeying the order of a superior officer?"
"No, sir," said the warriors, bowing and hauling open the bronze door.
Cruz nodded to the guards and gestured that the four of them should pass through. Cinderman, Euphrates, and Mercedy left the audience chamber, the door slamming behind them with an awful finality. With the sounds of the dying planet and the gasps of shock suddenly cut off, the silence that enveloped them was positively unnerving.
"Now what do we do?" asked Mercedy.
"I get us as far away from the vengeful spirit as possible," answered Cruz.
"Off the ship?" asked Cinderman.
"Yes," said Cruz. "It is not safe for your kind now. Not safe at all."